We're going to be in James chapter 1. James chapter 1. We're going to look at verses 2 through 4 this morning. So if you would, open your Bibles if you're not already there. This is a passage that I've been studying quite a bit recently, a passage that I'm going to be encouraging our summer staff with, even as they come onto camp this week. And as I was talking to Pastor Sam, and as you can imagine, when you're going to fill pulpit somewhere, you never know really where you're going to land or what you should maybe talk about, because you're going into a church where you've never met the people. You don't really know what you're going through and things like that. But he just encouraged me just to be an encouragement to you. And this passage has been an encouragement to me, and I hope it will be to our summer staff as we embark on a summer of ministry together. Let me ask you this question. Have you ever used something to accomplish something that something that you were using was not, and that something that you were using was not being used for the intended purpose? So like, you know, you need a hammer, but you don't have a hammer, so instead you use a screwdriver, you know, and you take the blunt end of the screwdriver and you're trying to, you know, hammer in the nail instead of just walking 10 feet to get a hammer that's out in the garage, you know. I do this with tools all of the time, right? If I can make something work, even if it's not intended for that purpose, I'm going to try to make it work just to save myself 10 steps. I think many of you men can probably relate. I'm not really much of a handyman, but I've been known to fix a few things here and there and break a few things now and then. But sometimes I need to fix something and I don't quite have the right tool to complete that task. So we improvise. It's pretty amazing that I haven't lost a finger at this point. Probably some of us can relate to that. Believe it or not, there's actually a few products on the market today that are marketed for different purposes than they actually were invented for. I'll give you a couple of examples. How about a text message? How many of you use text messages to communicate? All of us probably, you know, yeah. We all use text messages. Probably in our day, one of the primary means of communication, when you just want to get a quick word out to somebody, hey, I need you to do this or that. Like, I have a group chat with our staff, and that's all we do. We just text message each other back and forth. Hey, who's going to help serve breakfast? Who's going to do this? It's just a really unique and quick way to communicate. Well, text messages, when they first were being developed, actually were going to be used as a means of communication, but it was supposed to be a means of communication between a cell phone provider and their customer to say, hey, our cell phone network is not working. Our calling network's not working. There's an outage. And that's really what the text message was developed to be, was just a communication between the provider and you, the customer, not necessarily from customer to customer. Thankfully, they developed it into what it is today, and we were able to use it. How about Kleenex? We all know what Kleenex are used for. We got a couple up here on the front pews, maybe used for wiping our tears or, you know, doing other things that we don't need to talk about. Kleenex originally were developed in the 1920s, not to replace the handkerchief, but actually they were developed just to take ladies' makeup off. That was what they originally, you know, made for. That was all they were made for. How many of you ladies use Kleenex to take off your makeup? Probably none of you. You know, you're like, that's weird. That wouldn't work, right? So Kleenex are used differently today than maybe what their intended purpose was originally. This morning we're going to look at the book of James chapter 1, where we are reminded that there is a particular purpose, a very specific purpose for what God allows to happen in our lives. Perhaps you are here this morning having faced some challenges here recently. Maybe a loved one has passed away. Maybe you're facing financial hardships. Maybe you're going through some different struggles related to family members. Maybe you're having issues relationally, in your marriage, with your spouse, with a coworker, I don't know. There could be any number of things that you may be going through this morning. Even as the special music was sung this morning, we were reminded of even the world around us and all of the different things that are happening and going on, and the struggles that people are facing. Perhaps this morning you're facing some trials that are bringing out from within you attitudes of anger or pride or bitterness. How about self-righteousness? Church family, I don't really know what each and every one of you are facing today or will face even this coming week or this coming month or year. After all, we've just met. But this morning, I want to encourage you with this, that there is a purpose to be found in the trials that you and I face. How do we find that purpose? That's probably a pretty important question to ask. When you're in the midst of trouble, it's sometimes difficult to kind of take a step back and see what the purpose is. And so we want to preemptively figure out what that purpose is so that we can predetermine to have the right attitudes and take the right actions when it comes to the trials that we face. James chapter 1, verse 2 through 4, we've already read it, but I will read it again to remind you. I apologize, I am going to read out of the New King James this morning. I realize you guys, many of you are using ESV. My ESV is buried in a box somewhere, and so I will use my trusty NKJV this morning. Verse 2 says, "My brethren, count it all joy when you fall into," or maybe your ESV says, "meet various trials, knowing that the testing of your faith produces patience," or steadfastness. "But let that steadfastness," or let that patience, "have its perfect work, that you may be perfect and complete, lacking nothing." I think there are a few principles and reminders that we can draw from this passage this morning in relationship to facing trials and difficult circumstances in our lives. How many of you would say this morning, I won't make you raise your hand, but how many would you say, like, yeah, I've faced some trials recently? Anyone? Anyone faced some trials recently? I think probably most of us could relate to this. And if you're not facing a trial currently, perhaps you did a month ago or last year. And if you wait long enough, this side of eternity, you're probably going to face a trial or two in the near future. I think that as we look at this passage this morning, there are a few principles we can draw from it. First, I want us to consider that when we face trials in our lives, we ought to first change our perspective. We ought to change our perspective. You know, sometimes when we are in the middle of a troubling situation, as I mentioned a little bit earlier, it can be difficult to wrap our minds around what is actually happening, to make sense of the details, to make sense of what's going on. We often look at a situation, we look at circumstances, and have a hard time processing it. And what may seem like a very terrible situation, God sees perhaps as an opportunity for us to grow in our faith, grow in Him. You know, sometimes we face things that are no fault of our own. Of course, we all face trials and situations where it's our fault. They're consequences. That's not what I'm necessarily talking about this morning. These are trials that attack us from without, not from necessarily within. Several years ago, as I mentioned earlier, we had a fire at Skyview Ranch, 2019. I wasn't there. I woke up that morning and just saw a Facebook post, probably like many of you, where it said, hey, we had a fire, and they showed pictures of this our dining hall just up in flames. And I can't imagine waking up that morning and driving up the lane and seeing just this building engulfed in flames. Imagine going home this afternoon and your house is just in flames. Imagine trying to make sense of that trial in the midst of the situation, right? Where you're just looking at it like, man, what is going on here? I bring the fire up only to say this. I don't tell everyone this necessarily. Perhaps I am today since we're live streaming. That fire at Skyview Ranch, though it seemed tragic and devastating the day it happened, probably is one of the most miraculous things that ever happened to the camp, at least in this period of time, because it has allowed us to kind of hit the reset button a little bit. The camp was $800,000 in debt. really no funds to complete projects that needed to be done, and they had visions to do certain things, and things seemed to be kind of on the decline a little bit, and then the fire happens, and now we're essentially debt-free. We've got a little bit of debt on the new building, but they were able to build this new building with very little debt and pay off some of the old debts, and it just seems like the camp, Skyview Ranch, is still open today because maybe of this fire. And so this situation that seemed tragic at the beginning, to be honest with you, is working out in God's perfect timing. In the end, we're seeing good things happen. I'll give you another example of a tragic situation. So I am the Elyria Police Department chaplain. I've been with Elyria Police Department for about 3 years, maybe a little bit, maybe just a little bit less. As part of my ministry, as part of my chaplaincy ministry with the police department, they send me out in full uniform. So I would look just like another officer, with the exception of a duty belt and a gun. They don't trust me with a gun. And so I go out with our officers. I do ride-alongs a couple times a week with our officers, and I'm out on scenes and helping with traffic stops and just all sorts. Anything they need me to do, I help them with it. I try to minister to our officers, but I also try to minister to our community. About a year and a half ago, I was called into the department because we had a gentleman who, and this made international news, we had a gentleman in Elyria, decided that he wanted to end his life. He couldn't handle life anymore, and so he had a wife and he had 3 kids and a dog. And he came home that day, and for whatever reason, he decided to take the life of his 3 children. They were all playing in their own bedrooms. He walked in and he took the life of the first one. Walked in the second room, took the life of the second one. Walked in the third room, took the life of his 3rd child. He laid down on the couch. He waited for his wife to get home from work. She walked in the door. He took her life as well. Then he took the dog's life. And then he decided to lay down on the couch and he'd take his own life. So I get called to the scene with these officers who are trying to process a crime scene, at the same time process how in the world could a man take the life of his 3 children, his wife, and himself. What a coward. And so part of my responsibilities as a chaplain is then to help maybe kind of pick up some of the pieces. And so I was called to the scene to go do what we call death notification. So we find the next of kin, and we go tell them that they've lost their loved one. In this case, they've lost everyone that was near and dear to them. And so the first death note that I had to do was to a wonderful lady named Barbara. Barbara is a dear saint. She was at work that day, and so myself and my supervisor, we went to her place of employment. We pulled her into the break room, and we had to break the news to her that her daughter was murdered and her 3 grandbabies were murdered. And Barbara obviously broke down. That was the most devastating news I think we could have ever shared with Barbara. And so in that moment, it was very difficult to see what the Lord might be doing long term. I ended up doing the funerals for the 3 children, for the daughter, and was attended the funeral for the son, for the other mother, to try to help support her. To this day, I still have a very close relationship with Barbara and Rodney. They are attending our church back there in Elyria. They had kind of grown distant from the Lord over the years, hadn't really been living out their faith. And through those circumstances, we were able to do a lot of counseling and just help her through some very difficult times. And so ultimately, I think the Lord did some good things through that. And that's even hard for me to say, like, now, right? A year and a half later, but the Lord did some good things in that situation, and ultimately got some glory out of it. And so, this is what I'm talking about this morning: the trials that we face that really are not necessarily of circumstances that we could ever stop, if you will. Verse 2 says that we ought to count it or consider it all joy when we fall into or meet various trials. James is warning us here that we need to anticipate adversity We need to anticipate adversity. The reality is that we are faced with this side of eternity. We will face all sorts of trials and troubling situations in our lives. But if we change our perspective and we anticipate the trials, we will better be able to endure them, I believe. James wants us to know that we will fall, is the term he uses here in the NKJV or meet in the ESV. We will face circumstances beyond our control, but not beyond God's control. And ultimately, these circumstances will test our faith. Notice also here the idea that we will fall into or meet these trials of all kinds. The idea here is of meeting or falling into gives us the understanding that though we at times face troubles of our own making, like I said, these trials that James is particularly talking about are of no control of our own. These are circumstances that attack us from without. Think of it this way. You go home this afternoon after church and your house has been broken into and you have been robbed through circumstances which you have no control over. Somebody has gone through your home and taken everything that you hold dear. You did everything you were supposed to do. What are the things you're supposed to do? We lock the doors. We make sure the windows are secure. Maybe around here in this town, I don't know if in this town you guys lock your doors or not, but at Skyview Ranch we don't lock anything. If you ever want to come to my house, the door's always open. I don't even have a set of keys to my house, I don't think. But you locked your doors, you secured the windows, you did everything you could do. But James reminds us here that we can plan and prepare all we want. We can try to safeguard all we want to, but we will absolutely face trials. We should expect trials like this to happen. And though the specific timing of those trials is unknown, we can anticipate adversity. Also notice here that James says that we will meet various types of trials. The word various here means multicolored. Trials of all kinds. No two trials exactly the same. Trials perhaps tailor-made just for you. Or just for you. Or just for you. The reality of the trials that we face is that they are diverse. No two exactly the same. Now, this is important to understand in relationship to our perspective, because might I point out, as we are looking at others who are facing trials, when we're facing a trial, we're like, man, why? Why would this happen to me? When other people are facing trials, you're like, you know why that happened to her? You know why that happened to them? You know, we're real quick to judge other people facing things or having the answers on how they can fix things. But we need to be careful when we do this. We need to be extra cautious and extra gracious before we assume or presume that we know why somebody else might be in the circumstances that they find themselves in. We ought to be brothers and sisters in Christ, willing and able to come alongside of someone who is going through something without necessarily having the answer on how to fix it. The trials that we face, that you and I face, are varied. For us, this means that we ought to keep watch. We ought to be vigilant. We ought to have proper perspective of identifying the trials that we face so that we might be able to find the purpose in it. When we anticipate adversity, knowing it is before us, we will better be equipped to respond appropriately when it happens. Secondly, I want to challenge us as we change our perspective. Many times I think we also, do we need to anticipate adversity, we also need to alter our attitudes many times when it comes to the trials that we face. Verse 2 encourages us to count it all joy when we face trials. So what's this mean? This is an interesting imperative that James gives us here. The question is James really saying that in the midst of the trials that you and I are facing, in the midst of my frustration and my pain and my devastating loss, am I really to put a smile on my face and just enjoy the ride? Is that what James is saying here? imagine for just a moment, imagine the pain and the sorrow that the parents of these young children in Texas are facing this week. We already had it mentioned even this morning. And those of us who have kids and grandkids, like, man, imagine the pain that they are facing this week. Imagine the struggle it must be just to even get out of bed, knowing that your child's life was lost at the hands of this coward. Imagine for just a moment if I, as a pastor or a counselor, in trying to console these families or you going through a trial or tribulation, imagine as a counselor, I take you to James chapter 1, and I open my Bible and I say, listen, brother, count it all joy. That would be a rather inappropriate response to somebody in deep sorrow, would it not? Probably would be a difficult truth to swallow. I think you might agree with that. I don't think that it would be an appropriate response. And I do not believe that James is telling us here that in the midst of pain and frustration, we need to manufacture some sort of reckless or flippant or fake happiness. That's not what this is. We know that as mature believers. I don't think that I need to spend much time this morning illustrating the difference between joy and happiness, right? All joy here, when it says consider it joy or all joy, here means full joy, complete joy, unmixed, which is to be considered in the midst of trials. But the trial itself, of course, is not the source of our joy, is it? No. The trials that we face are uncomfortable. The trials that we face are devastating. The trials that we face are difficult. We're not to find joy in the trial as if the trial is the source of our joy. Count it all joy means that we are to predetermine, perhaps even today, this morning, as you're listening to my voice, that we are to predetermine an internal attitude of joy in consideration of the outcomes of the trials that we face, knowing the end results of the trials that we face. True joy is not necessarily found in the particulars of our painful circumstances, but instead in resting in the knowledge that the trials that we face are not out of God's sovereign control. James is encouraging us as believers to adopt once and for all, today, an attitude of joy, knowing that trials will come. This is the changing of our attitudes when faced with trials. And we need to understand that those trials serve a purpose. Again, you may be in the midst of something even this morning. I'm not asking you to be happy about the pain that you are facing. But would you consider them joy? Would you consider the trials that you face joy, knowing that God is doing something to make you more like His Son, Jesus Christ? Let's change our perspective as we face trials. Secondly, this morning, I believe that we would be wise to understand the process that God is using to grow us in order that we be able to find this purpose in the midst of the trials we face. Verse 3 gives us reason and the potential results of the trials we face. James says that we know that the testing or the trying of our faith produces patience or steadfastness. James says, know this. Understand this. Brothers and sisters in Christ, know this. The reason you're going through what you're going through, as the Lord has allowed you to go through it, is so that your faith might be tested. That your faith might be tested. You and I think this morning need to be reminded before we face trials that finding joy in the process is possible because we are given the opportunity to prove our faith. To prove our faith. Testing here, or the word trying, means to discover the nature of or quality of the object being tested. So just like fire is used to refine, James reminds us that trials are used to refine our faith so that we might see it is weak where we perhaps thought it was strong. So probably most of us in this room say, yeah, I've got faith, and my faith is strong. That faith is typically challenged in the midst of a trial, is it not, though? And so our faith is being tested. Have you ever faced a challenge or a set of circumstances and you would say this morning that you've responded out of character? Any of you? Maybe you got angry. Maybe you got frustrated. Maybe a good example of this would be like me parenting my children. And I try to be calm. I try to be a good dad. I try. But sometimes they just wear you down. And you respond out of character. And you're like, you just yell or you go off the handle or whatever. This is what I mean here. So some of us maybe this morning would say, yeah, I've responded out of character. And you thought at the end, man, I really messed that one up. Where in the world did that response come from? This is part of the reason God is allowing trials into our lives. As God allows trials to come our way, we know that our faith is being tested. And if our faith was never tested, perhaps it would never be strengthened. In fact, I would say that our strength would actually be pretty weak if it was never tested. So thank the Lord for trials to test our faith. I think it's important to note here that the testing and trying of our faith is not a test that God is giving so that we might prove anything to God. Think about that. God is not testing our faith so that we can prove our faith to Him. Does God not know the amount of our faith, the strength of our faith already? Instead, we are being tested in His infinite love and mercy so that we might know where our faith is weak, where we maybe thought it was strong. When we come face to face with the reality of our dependence on God, we are in an exceptionally more profitable position to grow into His likeness. It's really not until we are dependent on Him when we can really begin to grow in our faith. Look also with me at the results of our testing in which we can ultimately find joy. Verse 3 says, knowing this, that the testing of your faith produces patience or steadfastness. Remember, we know that the trials we face today have an intended purpose, and our faith is being tested so that it may be made patient or steadfast. That's an interesting thought here. The term used here in the Greek means literally steady under pressure. So that our faith might be tested so that it might become steady under pressure. If we face adversity, times of trial, times of pain and loss and difficulty, and endure through it. That's the caveat here. And endure through it. Keeping our eyes on Jesus, what we are told here is that our faith, instead of being shaken, will ultimately be strengthened. And therefore, we will be able to withstand even greater pressure. So our faith is being strengthened so that the next time we face a trial, the next time we face something difficult, we're ready for it, at least as ready as we can be. So let me ask you this morning, what is your typical response when you face adversity? Think about that for just a minute. What is your typical response when you face adversity? Are you able to consider the trials you face to be joy? Is your faith shaken in the midst of trials? Do you question God? Do you become bitter and frustrated? Or do the trials that you face build and increase your faith in Him? We've looked at our perspective and our need to change it. We've looked at the process that our faith is being tested. I want to encourage you this morning, finally, as we close, that as you face trials, ultimately, I want to encourage you to remain through the pain. Remain through the pain. When difficulties arise in our lives, the normal human response to adversity is often one of two things. If you've ever read the book, The Peacemaker, you're probably familiar with this concept. You've probably heard it before, but two extreme human responses in the midst of trials, in the midst of troubling situations, would be these two things. We either fight or we flee. We want to put up our fists and fight it. We want to fix it. We want to attack it head on. We want to go after it. Somebody gets up in our face and accuses us of something. We get up. We're ready to fight. Or some of us, we tend to flee. We don't like confrontation. We want to just separate ourselves. We want to get away from the trials and the tribulations that we face. In circumstances that come our way, especially when the situation is not our fault, if you will, at least I do. I'm not sure about the rest of you. I tend to fight back. I tend to get angry and upset and bitter and even at times question and doubt God's plan and purpose for what's going on. When there are issues that need to be fixed, you know, I'm gonna try to fix them to the death. Rather than, at times, understanding that God is working. And God is working on your behalf, and He's working on my behalf. God is working, allowing, and accomplishing something. And sometimes, I just need to move out of the way. In verse 4, James encourages us to let this patience or steadfast faith, the work that is being accomplished in and through testing and trials, we are encouraged here to let it be completed. You see, the steadfastness of our faith isn't actually the completed work. It's part of the process of the completed work. When James says here to let steadfastness have its full effect, it's rather unfortunate, but it gives us the idea that we are somehow giving permission to the work being completed. Instead, I think it is important to point out here that James is actually pointing out that we are to allow the work that has been started to be completed by simply moving out of the way, not giving God permission. Okay, God, yep, you can go ahead and do that now. That's not what James is saying here when he says, let the work be completed. By simply letting God complete the work and trusting Him to remain faithful, even in the midst of trials, is the process that we are going through. That is increasing our faith even more in God. So as God is allowing our faith to be tested, we're almost at the end of the trial. We kind of see some light at the end of the tunnel, if you will. When we're perhaps even ready to throw in the towel and we're just like, man, this is too much. I can't handle this anymore. James is here reminding us to persevere. Remain. Let your faith stand and be strengthened. It's tough, I know. It's frustrating, I know. But let it have its full effect. Let it run its course. Waiting for God can be difficult, but it doesn't necessarily have to be. You may be struggling today with no end in sight. The health concerns that you have, no answers. Not really sure what's going to happen. The financial situations that you're facing, no answers. No end in sight. Can't find work. Can't do this. Can't do that. The relationship issues that you're having in your marriage or whatever it may be, no end in sight. I want to encourage you this morning to wait. Yielded, perhaps broken before God. Because in the days of our deepest pain, I believe God can do some of His most amazing work. Bringing us out the other side, more dependent on Him, more in love with Him, more faith in Him. What God intends to do through trials is to grow us into his image, to sanctify us. James says here that we are to be, to let this steadfastness or patience have its perfect work so that we might be perfect and complete, lacking nothing. The word perfect here implies achievement of the goal, full development of Christian character in a mature believer. Entire, the word entire or complete, meaning complete knowledge applied in our everyday lives. Really what James is getting at here is a living faith. Really what the entirety of the book of James is about. The proof of our salvation, the living faith that we have. If you're a believer, this is what your life is going to look like. These are the things that you're going to do. James wants us to be sure. He wants us to be sure as his readers, as we head into a book full of practical wisdom, he wants us as readers to understand that it's not enough just to know spiritual things, but that we have to actually do something about it. Spiritual understanding that is applied to our everyday lives is what James is talking about here in terms of being complete, lacking nothing. It's not perfection in the sense that you and I, we've arrived, we've got it all figured out. Through trials, God intends to show us whether our faith is a living faith. God wants you and I to be sure that our spiritual understanding is matching the lifestyle that we say we are living. Perhaps you are struggling this morning to find purpose in the trials that you're currently facing. I want to encourage you to look to God and be assured that He is working on your behalf. Testing your faith, yes, but ultimately so that He might prove it to be a living faith. James chapter 1, verse 12 says this as we close. Blessed is the man who endures temptation or trial, for when he has been approved, he will receive the crown of life which the Lord has promised to those who love him. I want to encourage you this morning to endure through the times of trial. Let God grow your faith so that he might sanctify your life.